And good morning, everyone. Good morning on the Money Matters Morning Edition. And this morning, I am delighted to have Cheryl Blancato with us. And Cheryl is with the Second Chance Animal Shelter. And we're going to be here this morning, and she's got with her pal Joe is sitting with us this morning. And we're going to be chatting this morning about all the exciting things that's going on. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I got a release recently that your shelter was named one of the 10 best in the country.
Yes, by HSUS for the Emergency Placement Program. Yep.
We need to talk about that. I mean, that's just think about it. In the United States of America, mm-hmm. Second Chance Animal Shelter, in fact, it was listed number one. So I don't know if they graded them number one, but yours was named first. But in any event, it was one of the 10 best in the country.
Yes, that was we're honored to have that.
So that means you're doing a good job, Cheryl.
Well, we do a lot. You know, besides the local work that we do a lot of work with the emergency placement of animals from disasters and man-made or natural, and including things like hoarding cases, seizures of large amount of animals from cruelty cases, things like that. So we do a lot of work with that.
Well, you know, you mentioned that, and there's no question. And I understand you can watch the 6 o'clock news, and by the first commercial, you're so depressed you want to turn the thing off. But it's been amazing recently how many of these stories you hear about. And I imagine at one point they really meant well, in all fairness, mm-hmm. but they end up with 20 animals or 20 dogs or 20 cats, and they can't handle them, and someone steps in and the police, and they have to take them all, and I'm sure those cases, as you just mentioned, you know, those animals, many of whom are sick, you know, yes. and malnutrition, you know, they have to be taken care of and they have to be helped.
And it's a huge undertaking when things get out of hand. I mean, two cases that come to mind. One is there was a woman who you know, well-meaning, started taking in animals, couldn't afford to feed them. And before you know it, she had 60 or 70 dogs on her property in horrible conditions. Most of them had heartworm. Which can be fatal. And to get the animals off the property, I mean, HSUS had gone in there and got them off the property. We took some of them. We took actually 13. We ended up losing 3 of them because they were in such bad condition that just trying to treat them, they couldn't even make it through treatment. It was very sad.
Hoarding cases are particularly heinous because not only are the animals suffering, but the truth of the matter is that quote-unquote hoarder is also suffering. They love animals, which is how they got themselves into this situation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when we find these kinds of things and we walk into the situation, what we find is they're reluctant to turn the animals over to us because they love them. But they understand that many of the animals are sick.
Yeah.
As Cheryl said, some of them are probably not going to make it through. So taking those animals from them is a traumatic experience not only for the animals but also for the owners.
Right. Yeah. And so those are some of the things that you do. Now, the other thing is I know there's definite problems in the area where some of these animals are sort of left to their own vices. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that they will do is find a mate and have some little puppies or kitties.
Yeah.
And
over and over.
Yeah. And so what happens is we have this population growth of these animals who now are unattended and running wild.
Yep. It explodes. The statistics on how quickly they can breed.
It's insane. In fact, a case in point was this woman who took in 2 strays, a male and a female, didn't get them fixed. Within 2 years, she had over 70 animals in her house. In 2 years.
Wow.
And
they just keep breeding.
Yes.
Yeah, and for us, we,
because
you know,
every time you get a pair of male and a female, they're gonna go at it.
And it becomes overwhelming. I mean, it costs the shelter over $10,000 to take all those animals in, get them all fixed. you know, help out. We were helping another shelter who also took in the animals. You know, over $10,000 just to solve one case, and she was well-meaning.
Yeah,
but it got out of control.
I think realistically, people, you know, we think of our own world, and we think of how we operate. And first of all, a pregnancy is going to be 9 months, number one. And usually end up with one new individual.
Yep. Yes.
But they don't realize that cats, for instance, can, what, every 3 months?
They can go into heat every month, but they can get pregnant while they're still nursing their kittens.
Yeah.
And the birth rate in America is there are 7 animals born for every 1 human that's born.
Wow.
So unless every time you have a baby you're taking in 7 animals, the population of homeless continues to grow.
And that's a very serious problem. As you indicate, number one, it's a very expensive problem to solve. But don't you have programs where people can have those animals spayed and neutered?
Yep. Yes, yep. We have a wellness and education center in North Brookfield. We provide low-cost spay-neuter as well as vaccines. And people can have their cats done for $65 for a female, and that includes a rabies vaccine, which is required by law, $50 for a male cat. And we do dogs as well, and that is income-based, so it depends on your income as to what it is. But it's very little money, and it's worth it, not only just to stop the birth rate, but it's healthier for the animal, too.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's very, very important.
Yep. One of the things that the shelter's been around for 14 years, and of course, over 14 years, we've learned a lot of things.
You must be able to tell some great stories.
We can tell lots of stories. Yes, we could sit here for hours and hours and days. One of the things that we became painfully clear to us is there are approximately 3 to 4 million animals per year that are euthanized for lack of a home, lack of space. We thought about it, and our board of directors thought about it and said, could we build a shelter that could house 3 to 4 million animals a year? And, of course, clearly the answer to that question is no, we couldn't. Okay. And then we took it one step further and said, well, if we could build a shelter that big, would we be able to place 3 to 4 million animals per year? And, of course, the answer came clearly back, no, we would never be able to do that. So we began to look for what the real root cause of the problem is, and that is overpopulation, the birth rate, and that's when we said it's not really for us to be concerned about how many animals can we bring into our shelter. The real concern is how many animals can we keep from coming into our shelter,
whether it's
through behavioral issues in the home, whether it's through too many births. And that's when we began to embark on the kind of programs that we
have. We have a program every Thursday called Politics as Usual. And we have the various representatives from our area, and Senator Moore comes in. In fact, Senator Moore will be here this Thursday. And one of the things we always talk about our government, is our government's very, you know, very, very reactive.
Yes.
We wait till the bridge is going to fall,
yes,
and then we fix it.
Yep.
But we don't plan ahead and fix the bridges before they get deteriorated. And it comes to mind that to your point, you know, what the answer would be, rather than be reactive and say, okay, we need 4 million homes, go to do prevention and make sure you don't have 4 million to place.
Absolutely.
The way to do that is as you're indicating, is by these services that you provide where folks can have their animals, you know, taken care of, you know, and so that they're not going to be, you know, production masters.
Well, the estimate is that for every spay that we do, we stop 5 births. So you figure we did 5,343 last year. We stopped over 25,000 animals from being in the system. And what I tell people, we talk to people and they say, well, you know, I found good homes for all my animals, so it's okay. And it's, no, it's not. Because, yes, you may have found good homes, but those homes are now not available for animals that are already homeless, number one. And number two, if those people don't get the animal fixed, you're only adding to the problem.
Yeah.
And they don't understand that. And so we try to educate people that this is what we have to do. We have to stop the number of births because otherwise the shelters can't keep up.
Right.
The animals are getting euthanized, including puppies and kittens, because they're just, during kitten season, there's simply not enough space.
Right. Well, you know, the other thing, too, you mentioned is when we talked last time, is you have, you know, veterinarians who work at the shelter and who are, you know, obviously well-trained and know what to do and how to handle, you know, some of these animals and solve some issues.
That's correct. Yep. We have four vets all certified in the state of Massachusetts. A couple of them might be certified in another state. Four vet techs. We run our spay-neuter clinic 5 days a week, and we offer assistance to folks who really need it so that we can, in fact, do the things we're talking about. The other thing that goes along with this, which is you mentioned, education. You know, we talk about keeping animals out of the shelter is really the solution to the problem. That's the root cause. If we can educate people for behavioral issues, some of the phone calls that we get, you know, my dog is peeing in the corner of my house. I think I need to surrender it. Well, if we can teach that individual how to deal with that type of behavior so that it goes away, the animal stays in the house, it doesn't get surrendered to a shelter,
right,
and we've saved at least one animal that way.
Well, you know, you and I chatted earlier, and some of the calls that you do get, because you really are a training expert,
mm-hmm,
and I always maintain my kids, my daughter Kathy in Newport, she takes dogs and she resends them out, you know, she gets them that need homes and so
fostering,
forth.
Fostering,
yeah. Yeah, fostering. And Kerry has her little puppy, you know, and so forth. But the interesting thing is, I always laugh at the kids. I say, look, you know, you got to understand something. You don't train dogs. Dogs train people.
Yes,
they get you to do what they need you to do.
Yep.
You know, and I told the story. If a bunch of adults are sitting in a room and one of us get up and walk to the door, I guarantee not one other adult will get up and open the door. But if we were all sitting there and the dog goes to the door, eight of us run for the door to open it for the dog.
That is true, isn't it?
You know, and I always get a kick out of it. Yep. So let's talk about some of the issues, even to help people who get a brand new animal. They go to, they go down to the mall or wherever they go, neighbor, however they get it. Now they've got this animal and they have no idea.
Yes, that's correct.
What to do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're...
Other than he's cute.
Yes, and which is the major reason that the dog comes into the house, which is fine. The major issue is that there is a different society in the animal world as opposed to in our human world. Unfortunately for most humans, unless we decided that we wanted to be involved in the animal world, we don't really understand that society, how it works, how it's structured. So when we bring a new animal into a home, we deal with it with our human society mores. It doesn't work because the dog doesn't understand our society.
That's right.
So one of the things that we focused on is educating people on what is it like in the dog world? Why is that society different than ours? The first thing is in the dog world, there's a hierarchy. There has to be a leader. In our world, we treat each other equally. I'm nice to you, you're nice to me. In the dog world, that doesn't work. There's a pack situation. Someone has to be in charge. What happens is, invariably, I'd say, I don't want to exaggerate, but maybe 6 out of 10 times, problems are related to the fact that the humans have not taken the lead role. So the animal, by default, will take that lead role because in its world, there needs to be a leader.
He can do what he wants. That's right.
You're not doing it as a human, so therefore I need to take over. They really don't want to do that. In a pack of 10 animals, there's one leader. So 1 out of 10 has the capability to be able to be a leader. The other 10 don't want to know anything about it. When that dog does take over as leader is when we start to see behavioral issues. That's when we get the phone calls that say, I've had my dog for 3 years. He was sitting on the couch. I went to take him off the couch. He growled at me. I don't understand what happened. Well, what happened is it's his couch. And you've asked him to leave his couch.
That's right. And he's been there for...
Right. And in his brain, he's saying, this is my couch. You can't tell me to get off of my couch. So what we need to do is educate the owners on what the issue is, why the behavior is happening, which is the important thing, so that they can have a true feeling for what it is. And then what we'll do is create a system for them and a pattern of changing that behavior so that it in fact fits in our world.
Well, you know, in a funny way, and I have 5 kids. Now they're all grown. But I always tell the story because it took a long, long time. My oldest son and my next son are 13 months apart. Irish twins, they were affectionately known as.
I have grandchildren.
Yeah, well, poor Jonathan, who's second, was always in his brother's footsteps or his brother's shadow. And so he was a tough kid, you know. And so he and I had some, he used to test. He was a great tester. And we had a thing on Saturday night. John, be home at 10 o'clock. What time are you coming home tonight, John? I'll be home at 10, Dad. Great. See you at 10. And, of course, at 10 o'clock, I'd be sitting in the dining room waiting. And I'd look up, and all of a sudden, 3 minutes after 10, and he'd come. I'd look up at the clock, and I said, "Jack, you're 3 minutes late." "Oh, no, Dad, my watch says one off." One for Jack. So I made a sign that said, "This is the official clock," and I put it up on the wall. So the next Saturday, 10 o'clock, I'm waiting. He comes in at 3 minutes after 10. And I said, "Jack, you're 3 minutes late." "No, Dad, I got to tell you, I was having some fun with you. I was home about 5 or 10, but I stood in the garage, and I kept peeking in. I kept peeking in to see what you were doing." So he says, "I was really here." I says, "Good." I says, "But that's going to cost you." "What do you mean?" I says, "It's 3 minutes after 10. So next Friday night, you've got to be home at 9. "Oh, you can't do that to me." "Yes, I can."
"Yes, I can."
You know, so I understand what you just said, because kids are the same way.
You know,
kids are exactly, look, they will do exactly. Well, my son has children of his own.
Yeah.
And little Jackie is 10 and Katie's 8. And I got a phone call about 2 weeks ago from my son who's up in North Conway. And he's chatting. He says, "Dad, the real reason I called is I never thought I'd have to make this call. Because," he says, "when I was growing up, I vowed that if I ever had kids of my own, I would never, ever do to them what you did to me." Well, he said, "I've got a 10-year-old that absolutely knows everything in the world." And the other night we had a little discussion, and he looked at me and got in my face and told me I didn't know what I was talking about. And he said, "I looked at him and I let him have it, and I shot him up to his room so fast he didn't know what hit him. And when he was gone, I sat down on the couch and I said, oh my God, I just did exactly what my father." He says, "And I had a call to tell you." I said, "Jack, it took 40 years, but thank God you finally called me." And he said, "Dad, the last thing I said was, you know what? The son of a gun was right again." You know, but it's true.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kids, and it's absolutely true.
Yep.
And they'll do exactly what you allow them to do.
Absolutely.
And if you let them sit on that couch, and you don't tell them that couch in the living room is not theirs, guess what? The next time you come, they'll be stretched right out with a pillow under them.
And if you dare go near them, they're going to show you teeth or
growl. Oh, yeah.
They can't verbalize, so the only way they have to communicate with us is that way. I use the analogy of, if your kids write on the wall with crayons, what do? You correct them. You say you cannot write on. If the dog does a behavior that is inappropriate in our world, we need to correct that behavior. The difference is, and this is a big difference, dogs really don't want to be leaders.
No.
People, on the other hand, you know, I don't want to be number two. I want to be number one, and I'm very upset if you make me number two. In the dog world, make me number 10. You take care of everything.
Yeah.
You feed me.
You make sure my doggy treats are there, and I'll tell you.
And I'm very comfortable with
that.
Well,
you know what? When we had Brandon, of course, the black lab, and I first thing I did was I got a newspaper and I rolled it up and folded it. And my little daughter said to me, "Dad, you're not going to hit the dog." I said, "I will never hit the dog." She said, "Well, what is that for?" I says, "You watch." So he did something I didn't want him to do, and I took the paper and I whacked it in my hand as close to him as I could. Boy, he looked at me, and so after a while, all I had to do was walk over and just pick it up.
Yes.
And he moved right along.
Yep.
You know. And it was to your point. And it's not hard. You have to be the disciplined person.
Well, you also need to start early. To your point about children, I never allowed my 2-year-olds to do what may be cute at 2, but wouldn't be cute at 5.
That's right.
Same thing with puppies. You know, if it's cute when they're little, but when they're 2, it wouldn't be so cute. Stop it then. Especially little things like, you know, they think it's cute when they pull on your clothes or something.
Yeah.
Well, that's cute at an 8-week-old puppy, but a 2-year-old grabbing on your clothes is not so cute.
Well, I've worked with pit bulls, one of my favorite breeds, for 14 years. I know the breed.
Boy, do they have a reputation.
They've just got a bad rap. But
aren't they dangerous?
All dogs can be dangerous.
Oh, sure. They got a mouth that bites.
Absolutely. I can tell you that.
Tell me about it.
In the years that I've been doing what I'm doing, most of the times that I've been bitten, it's by little dogs. Little dogs have what I call little dog syndrome.
Complex, oh yeah.
Yeah.
And my daughter has a Chihuahua, Murphy. And he's the most arrogant, cocky little thing you've ever witnessed.
They're one of the number one biters.
Oh, yeah.
Yep,
well, he doesn't bite. He just barks.
Yeah.
The larger dogs, the power breed, the pit bulls, the Akitas, the German Shepherds, the Brodies, et cetera, are they dangerous? Again, all dogs are dangerous if we allow them to be dangerous. Pit bulls, in fact, are a very loving breed. They've got a bad rap, just like many years ago it was the Doberman Pinscher.
Oh, yeah.
And before that it was the German Shepherds.
Shepherds,
and,
oh, yeah. Because of the war.
The pit bulls are actually called the nanny breed.
The actual background of a pit bull, going way, way back into Europe thousands of years ago, the farmers used to take the babies in their baskets to go out and either plant the fields or to harvest the fields. And what they would do is put the basket by the side of the field. The pit bull would sit by the baby's basket and protect it from the other animals that were there while they were out in the field doing it. So,
well, because I think the name itself scares people.
Well,
pit
yeah.
bull. If they were called, Smithies. No, yeah. Nobody would
well,
say.
You know, they're really American Staffordshire Terriers and things like that. Pitbull is just a phrase that's been coined.
Where that name came from, and again, most people don't know this. People think it's because they put them in a pit to fight with other dogs. Well, the truth of the matter is, back in Europe, originally they would put pit bulls in a pit to a fight with rats. They would put rats in the pit, and whichever pit bull got the most rats was the winner. So that's where the name pit bull. It is not associated with what the criminals do today with pit bulls, which is a horrific, horrible thing. Yep. And Cheryl and I have been on several nationwide bus of dog fighting rings, and I can tell you it's a horrific sight.
Oh yeah,
and I can tell you those dogs were not at all. I mean, the one we were in St. Louis was over 500 animals.
Yep. 500 pit bulls taken off of 8 different properties in a simultaneous raid by the government and the Humane Society. They were brought to a temporary shelter in St. Louis. While they were there, 150 puppies were born. Cheryl and I spent a week out there with those animals, and I can tell you every one of them was loving, and all they wanted to do was sit in your lap.
Yeah.
But if you abuse a dog, you get that kind of result, whether it's a Chihuahua,
You
talked about, or whether it's a Rottie or a pit bull. So just a lot of misinformation. Perhaps someday we'll get to talk about that as a specific, because it's just a horrific thing.
So, but there's a lot to do. There's a lot of work that needs to be done, and people need to be aware. That's why I'm so glad we had a chance to stop in this morning and chat about this. Because, and again, you know, so folks understand, across the whole nation, the Second Chance was named one of the 10 best in the United States of America. And boy, I tell you, that really says something about the work you do and the things that you accomplish at Second Chance. What do you have? 2 locations?
We have the Adoption Center in East Brookfield, and then we have the Wellness Center in North Brookfield. You know, the Adoption Center is small. It's got that nice country feel, and that's what we like about it. But the real work goes behind the scenes, you know, the Wellness Center, all the other work we do. It's expensive. It costs us $2,400 a day, 7 days a week, to operate the facilities and do all the
programs. And so now, but that raises the issue. Then you must have to do fundraising.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
That's primarily
I was gonna
what
say,
Cheryl and I do is try and get the funds to continue to run the programs that we have.
Yeah, when people get a cat fix for $65, it's not that it costs $65. That's their co-payment. The rest is absorbed either through the shelter, through grants, donations, things like that. That's how we can offer those costs.
And that's a very, very important. I know when we spoke last time, you were very very clear that it's vital that people make sure that they have these animals spayed and neutered.
Absolutely.
because that's stopping the flow, so to speak, and if they can't, you know, and people mean well, as we said at the beginning of the program, they're wonderful people and they really care and they want to come in and they want to get things done, and the problem is, unless they understand, and I think through this type of program, these are how folks can understand that it's vital that they take care of the animals and keep them healthy, number one, and protect them, number two, because and we can talk, I suppose we could do a whole program on animal abuse. You know, how people and in many cases they don't even realize they're doing it. They just, you know, they'll take off and leave the animal alone for 3 days or 2 days and put a little bowl of food out and figure they'll be fine, and they're not fine.
No.
And my feeling is, you know, we need to clean up our own backyard before we can clean up another backyard. And so we need to solve the problems locally. And then we can start branching out and helping further and further. Because, I mean, the problem is across the country. It's not just any one area. And so that's why if everybody did their part and got their animals fixed, they would help out in this area, and then we'd be able to help. I mean, a lot of times you see people posting about an animal in New York or California or whatever that's in need. Well, it's very hard for shelters here to help them if there's already an overwhelming amount here. So we tell everybody, you know, do your part. Just get them fixed.
Let's talk a little bit about the adoption center. You do have an adoption center.
Yes, sir.
And these are animals that have come to you mm-hmm. from various sources, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And now you've sort of rehabbed them a little bit and make sure they're healthy and they're mm-hmm. and they're fit as a fiddle and ready to go. And now can folks just go and what do they have to do to if they had interest in adopting one of your animals?
Well, let me start from the beginning. The first thing we do when an animal comes into us via whatever avenue it comes to us, we do a complete evaluation on the animal. What we want to determine is the animal healthy? B, does it show us any signs of human aggression, food aggression, toy aggression, anything like that? Unfortunately, if it does show us those kinds of aggressions, we can't take it in. The reason we can't take it in is if we brought a dog into the shelter that was human aggressive, we wouldn't be able to place it. Two things would happen. One, that dog would occupy a kennel that another dog could be occupying that could be adopted. And number two, keeping a dog in a kennel for the rest of its life is not quality
what you want
of life. So,
yeah.
So the dogs come in, they get evaluated.
I mean, do you have a dog that, when you say it's aggressive like that, there's not much you can do to...
Well, we're a limited admission shelter, which means that all animals are evaluated on intake, so we wouldn't take that animal into
the
shelter.
First place.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But, I mean, the question then still exists. Could eventually that dog be worked on and helped?
It could, absolutely.
But a lot of work.
It's a lot of work.
It depends on the issue.
And it depends on the exact issue of the dog. There are dogs that have neurological issues, as an example, that, you know, may have been from abuse in the past. The dog may have been hurt, injured. Those need to be evaluated by a veterinarian to see if, in fact, there is a way to rehabilitate that. For the most part, all dogs can be behavior modified, but it takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, a lot of people just aren't ready to take on that kind of
responsibility.
Yeah. When I go into a situation where people have called me because a dog has bad behavior, the first thing that I have to ask is, are you committed? Are you willing to do the work? Because this isn't something that's going to take an hour. This is going to take some time.
Yeah.
If there is no commitment, you know, I work 10 hours a day and I've got kids and I can't spend that kind of time, then the best thing to do is surrender that dog so that it can properly be dealt with.
So let's get back to the adoption. Yep. So let's say a dog comes in and they pass the test.
Yep. They're taken into the shelter. First thing they do is go over to our wellness center, which is located out in North Brookfield. They're completely examined by the veterinarians. We'll do testing. We'll do blood draws. They'll get their microchip. They'll get all their vaccinations. If they need spay-neuter, they get that. Once the wellness center has cleared the dog, then it's available for adoption. It will go up on our website. There'll be a picture. There'll be a little description of the dog because we've handled the dog now, so we know its personality. And the public is welcome to come and visit the animals any time during the week when our public hours are there. And what
we have a website, so they can go on the website too and look it up.
They can, there is an adoption application to fill out. A lot of our animals don't even make the website because there are people that already have their application in and approved.
Yep.
And come in and see the animal and get them adopted before they even
get
on the website.
Before they hit the website.
Yeah. Well, that's great. So how many do you actually have?
Right now we have about 70, 75 animals there.
That are ready to go.
Yeah. That are ready to go, yeah.
Wonderful.
And we have a lot more in foster care, you know, waiting. Yeah. Either they're kittens that aren't of age yet or animals that have medical issues that are, you know, we're treating first.
Right.
Well, that's all sizes, breeds.
What's the web page?
SecondChanceAnimals.org.
That's easy.
Yep.
Well, Joe and Cheryl, I must thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for having
us. And hopefully we'll be able to put something together and have a regular program, because I think this, as you indicated, Joe, numerous times this morning, there's so many different things to talk about. And we could even do a program on what do you do when you get a new animal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And just talk about the process, you know. And then, you know, so many other things. I know the neutering and spaying thing is tantamount. It's the driving force.
Yes, it is.
You know, and that's got to be tantamount to get this done. Well, thanks a whole bunch, and congratulations once again on being, and well, let's just call it the best in the country.
Thank you.
How about that?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Terrific.